We're going to try to keep it kind of generic and try not to reference too many specific projects.
Why not?
Well, I mean,
we're clients.
I just want to know who's a pain in the ass to work with.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we're,
that's
exactly
the exact question we said.
This is Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon, bringing to you the best in news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. And I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman. You may remember back on episode 334, and we talked about how to engineer a distillery, everything that goes into it from mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and everything like that. But we forgot to start off with a key component, and that's the architecture. A quick Google search for distillery architects will always lead you to one place, Joseph & Joseph & Bravura. The architecture firm is synonymous with creating the most iconic distillery and visitor experiences all across Kentucky. They got their start by designing Four Roses back in 1909 and have since then been the lead architects on places like Old Forester in downtown Louisville, Bardstown Bourbon Company, Michter's, Lux Row, Angel's Envy, and so many more. We're joined by Cash Motor and Eric Huelsman, who are both partners in the firm. We discuss the history of the firm, and then we dive into what it takes to architect a distillery, where to start, and how do you design around a bunch of different constraints. With that, enjoy this week's episode. And now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. Today's idea comes from Nate J. Or is it J. Nate? Nate J. A two first name, last name. Nate J writes me on fredminnick.com. Where do you think bourbon would be today in 2022 had prohibition never happened? What? This is the kind of question I have never really thought about, but it is a fascinating one to ponder. Oh my goodness. If prohibition never happens, wow. Oh boy. So if prohibition never happens, I'll throw a couple ideas out that may shock a few people. If prohibition never happens, I don't think Jim Beam would be as powerful as it became. Reason being, you know, there were a lot of brands and brand names that were out there that did not have the strength to carry on. So Beam was a really good name and a solid brand, but it was not the mega powerhouse that it was. And it wasn't until after Prohibition that they kind of became more of that. And I think that they garnered strength in Prohibition. Same with, Pappy Van Winkle, same with Brown-Forman, National Distillers. You know, a lot of those big companies that survived Prohibition had the manpower and the strength and the know-how to do it. But there were other families like the McBrayers and what's that one in Marion County I'm always talking about? The Blairs, McBrayer and Blairs. Those are two. So McBrayer would have been like in Anderson County, and the Blairs would have been in Marion County. And so those are two really strong whiskey names that would have been much more powerful had Prohibition never happened. Also, you know, I think the Nelson Distillery, so Charles, we know them now for Nelson Greenbrier, but Tennessee had a Prohibition starting in 1909. And if Prohibition never happens, Charles Nelson, which was larger than Jack Daniel's at the time, I think would have continued its steam. But, you know, they had kind of lost their patriarch, and they kind of changed quite a bit and just moved on. But that family just didn't continue during Prohibition, at least at a high pace. So I think those are just a few ideas. And I think the concept of a craft distillery would never have existed, because they would just remained independent, and there would have been distilleries all over the country. You would have seen distilleries in New Jersey, you know, Montana, all over the place, you know, as early as like the 30s and 40s because people did make whiskey all over. It was just, you could argue it wasn't any good, but they made it. And I would say last, but certainly not least, if Prohibition never happened, we would not have the three-tier system. The three-tier system was created to give control to the states. So essentially every state became its own regulatory authority, from importing to issuing tavern licenses at the municipality level after Prohibition. Prior to that, it was, you could sell alcohol a lot differently. I mean, hell, you could sell it to one another. You know, so the three-tier system would have been avoided entirely if Prohibition never happened. But that's an amazing question, one that I have not really pondered, but I like those kind of what-if questions, you know? I mean, hell, that'd make a good movie. That'd make a really good movie. I mean, I doubt tons of people would watch it, but it'd be a good movie. But that's going to do it for this week's Above the Chart. If you would like to be like Nate J, hit me up on fredminnick.com. That's fredminnick.com. And if I like the question, I'll read it on the air. Until next week, cheers.
And they're off for another Get 270 2020 Unicorn Raffle. Your $20 ticket gives you not one, but two chances to win from our lineup of 20 Woodford Reserve treasures, including the grand prize, the rarest unicorn yet, the Woodford Reserve Kentucky Derby 150 Baccarat Edition. Only 150 bottles were made and is just like the one the Derby winning owner receives. Quit horsing around and get your $20 tickets now at give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. Ed Bly and Rising Tide Spirits are back again with a new release of Old Stubborn Bourbon. And this release of Old Stubborn is a premium hand marriage of 10, 11, and 12-year cask strength, barely filtered pot still bourbon. It comes in at a staggering 123.8 proof, and the flavoring grain for this one, which the last one was wheated, but this time it's now rye. Rich, sweet, and bold with a long finish that's sure to be another eye-opener. You can order online at Sealbox or thebourbonconcierge.com, and you can even purchase in person at Revival Vintage Spirits, and even now with very few select stores in Kentucky. You can get it now while you can, but be sure to do it because it's not going to last long. Welcome back. Another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. And I'm with Ryan today, and we're talking about something that is very interesting, because back on episode 334, it was when we talked about the mechanical engineering side of building a distillery. And today, Ryan, we're talking about the architecture side.
Yeah, the pretty side. You know, the mechanical is just how everything works, how everything gets done.
The guts.
It's all the processes, whatnot, but the architecture is what's the beauty, the majestic, the when you walk in and you get this feeling, you know, when you walk in there. So yeah, I'm excited to talk to these guys today and understand the whole architecture part, because I'm sure designing around a distillery is super simple and like no problems whatsoever.
Everything just goes according to plan.
And there's no codes and regulations. It's just like super, you know, it's an easy, you know, it's like designing a, you know, a house or something.
That, or you have all these expansion projects from distilleries that had been started back in like 1909. Right. And you're just like, hey, you know, that's fine. Just go ahead and add another building here. We'll add another fermenter. It should be pretty easy, right?
Yeah, just work with the existing structure. You know, it's sound and...
We don't need to increase the pipe size. Like the water pressure is fine.
Yeah.
But today on the show, let's go ahead. We'll give them the introduction. So today we have Eric Kielsman as well as Cash Motor. They are partners at Joseph & Joseph and Bravura Architects. Now, before we actually lead them on, I want to make sure, give them a little bit of a, like, how important this is, because this is some of the hands that they've had their responsibilities. They kind of had their hands in. They've done Old Forester, Bardstown Bourbon Company, Angel's Envy, Four Roses, Michter's, James B. Beam, Lux Row, Fred B. No, Kentucky Peerless, James E. Pepper, and Jephthah Creed.
That's a lot of places now when I say it. But guys, welcome to the show.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
I was joking with Kenny last night. I was doing some research and I was like, man, they're the Buzicks of architecture. You know, the Buzicks build all the warehouses, rick houses for all the distilleries. And then apparently Joseph and Joseph does all the architecture. So
we're trying. We're trying to get them all.
got that market cornered.
That's right. That's right.
That's a good place to be, though. But before I kind of dive into that a little bit, I kind of want to know a little bit about you all. Like, how did you all get into the architecture side? And how did you find your way into saying, like, hey, this whole like building a bourbon thing is pretty cool? So Cash, I'll kind of start with you.
Sure. So the firm was started in 1908, and it's my family firm. Two brothers, Al and Oscar Joseph, started the firm in 1908.
So you really didn't have a choice but to go into
it. Yeah, exactly. So it was I was either get kicked out of the family or do this, but it worked out well. So we've been doing it. The first distillery we did is, it's now Four Roses Distillery. It was JTS Brown back in the day. That was in 1909. And we've been doing it ever since. So their two sons took over, came in the 30s, and then one branch left and went to California. And then my grandfather joined the firm in the 50s. So he was a structural engineer, went to college and came back after World War II and joined the firm. And then my dad joined the firm in the 70s. So, and then all the Josephs have, they were smarter than us and became attorneys. And so luckily it's the motors taken over since then. And then Eric joined us a few years back.
Yeah, I was actually at Brevera, the other name you mentioned there, other than Joseph and Joseph, and had the privilege of working on Old Forester. Was the first distillery project that I got to work on. So that always holds a special place in my heart. An amazing project if you've been there. And so I went to another firm for a little bit, did a little bit of distillery work there, but never really got back into it. So when Cash reached out to me, I did a little research on Joseph and Joseph, and it was a great fit, so here we are.
Joined forces.
We did, yeah.
Kind of like a Voltron kind of episode where it just kind of comes together.
That's right.
That wasn't the plan, but it's amazing how these, you look back, and this was, a little over 3 years ago now. And it's just worked out. And Brevera is a phenomenal firm too, and done some great work. So when we were sort of looking to grow and expand, it just made a lot of sense. So that's how it all came to be.
And did you have any experience doing the whole distillery side of things before this, or was that sort of a new thing for you?
I mean, prior to the Old Forester job, no. A lot of my early career was restaurants, hospitality, which is, very relatable to a lot of the bourbon side of things. Complicated, you're jamming a bunch of stuff into a small building. So I think, relatable there, but no, until Old Forester, that was kind of my first bourbon experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did Joseph and Joseph do before the bourbon boom? What other focuses, I guess, do you have? Because it was probably pretty boring in the distillery architecture because nobody was expanding, adding on, doing all these beautiful things.
Yeah, so we did a lot of work for Brown-Forman, and through the 80s, we've been doing that work for them since the 30s, but we did a lot of work for them. We did their whole campus in the 80s and 90s. Converting what we built in the 30s into their corporate campus. But we also do a lot of multifamily residential. So we also do some parks work. We have a lot of some hotel work that we're doing right now. So we have our hands in a lot of different aspects of the business. Around here, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. It's just not big enough market. But bourbon has been good to us over the past 10, 15 years as it's grown exponentially.
Yeah, I'd say so. There's no shortage of distilleries that want to expand or anything like that. And it seems to be the good place that you're in right now, that you're the first phone call a lot of these people make. So how does that relationship get established? Like how does, Four Roses easy because, hey, we were there in 1909.
Hey, you remember us back then?
Yeah.
We still have the drawing.
That's exactly right.
That helps.
Yeah, it does help. It comes lots of different ways. Most, it's personal relationships really and word of mouth, so as I'm sure you've learned over your podcast, that the bourbon industry is a little incestuous in terms of lots of people moving from place to place. Lots of everybody shares tips and resources in all aspects of the business. And I think consultants are no different. I like to say that we do a good job and people think that we do a good job and share our name with their friends and their colleagues. And and just we continue to build the book of business and good loyal clients. We like to, you know, luckily we've been working with lots of these brands for lots of years, you know, historically as well as, you know, over the past 15 years as they've all grown, and we've kind of grown with them. So we, that's the best way.
When they call you back for the next project, that's always, always a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like in a contractor, right? It's like, if I can have a kitchen done once, but if I don't like your tile work, I'm not going to have you come back, right?
So exactly.
Get all the little details.
One bad experience and you're done. So I think that's kind of a testament to the level of work that we do, that they keep calling us back. So it's good for us.
Yeah, yeah. And the word of mouth doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so Kenny mentioned all those names, you know, some new buildings, some old, this and that. What, as an architect, what gets you going? Do you like rehabbing something old, or would you like a blank canvas like Barstow Bourbon Company? I'm just trying to dig and say, who's your favorite client? And who's, no, I'm kidding. But, you know, what kind of do you like prefer? A new design, blank canvas, or existing, working within an existing structure?
What do you want to take that one?
Oh, man. I don't know. It depends. In a lot of ways, an old building, you know what you've got to work with. You know where the strengths of that building are visually, and you know, you sort of try to bring those to life. In a lot of ways, a new project is harder because you're inventing it from scratch. But at the same time, you can put things wherever you want, right? You can set things up to be maximized. And I think that's something that we've really started perfecting, is the process, not just what the building looks like, but understanding the flow of materials from coming in as grain to leaving in the barrel and even coming back for bottling and things like that. So, you know, they both have their advantages. I think, you know, as architects and going to architecture school, you always sort of lean towards that more modern design, I would think, if we were going to start our own distillery or something like that. But we'll take any project.
So talk about, like, you know, you said Angel's Envy, Old Forester, Michter's. You know, Michter's had the, you know, the whole collapse and all this during, and all,
it took them like what?
Well, the stairway,
it took a long time.
You know, Old Forester had their share of problems with the fire and this and that. Like, you know, talk about, like, I guess
how Whiskey Rose just
Whiskey Rose not to, is, is not stable. No, I'm kidding. But I guess going through, like, working with the historical boards, like trying to keep everything, I guess, original as much as possible. How big a challenge is that?
Sure. Yeah. I'll take that one. I mean, it's a challenge and opportunity. I mean, you know, it's, those buildings are architecturally significant. The facades are really important. You know, a lot of those buildings were old warehouse buildings. You know, most of the ones that we've been in, there isn't a whole lot on the inside that's necessarily architecturally significant. I'd say they're mostly because they were warehouses. But the, you know, keeping that context is really important to the city and making sure those facades and, you know, and that's why people are attracted to it. The view from the public way and what you see, and how can we re-enliven those facades for the uses today, you know, and the good growth that we're seeing in the industry, and bring life back to those Whiskey Row buildings is fun but challenging. I mean, you said there are lots of structural issues that need to be dealt with.
Yeah, because wasn't there like an arson fire that happened? Like the guy that owned part of that Whiskey Row wanted to set it on fire or something to collect the money back?
Me.
Yeah, I was like, I could have sworn, because there was a big fire down there years
like
ago.
Like something was going on.
There was.
Whiskey Row every 6 months or something.
Yeah, it's like, what setback can we have this week?
Bravura's office was actually right behind that, and we were supposed to be starting the Old Forester project like the next week. Had the groundbreaking ceremony and the whole thing, and next thing you know, we look out the window and the buildings are on fire, which was kind of crazy. Now I don't know about the conspiracy theory of the arson.
I'm just throwing things out there. Let's see what sticks.
We heard, you know, it was a contractor accident or whatever.
That too.
But yeah, actually, it was lucky that the project hadn't started, because it was just the facades of the Old Forester project. There, we hadn't built, you know, the rest of the buildings behind it yet, so the fire wasn't able to jump to go all the way down the block. Otherwise, that whole block would be gone. So, unfortunate for the start of our project, it delayed it by a couple of years, because they had to rebuild the buildings next to it because they were braced across. But just adds to the story.
Yeah. More character at the end of the day.
And to the bill.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
So, definitely more expensive.
Yeah, I would think so. So when we talk about this, the process, if Ryan and I, we want to go and start our distillery. And we're like, hey, we're gonna call on these guys, the Buzics of the architecture world of distillery making over here. Where does it start? Like, how does those conversations begin? Or does it start to say, how much money do you have? Like, where does that conversation start?
That's not a bad place to start.
Yeah.
That's a good way to weed out.
Yeah.
So the first thing we always want to do is, what's your goals for the project? You know, what is this, a production facility? Is it only a production facility? Is it a visitor center, mostly visitor center? You know, what's the production really for most of them, and the visitor interaction, it really sort of starts the conversation, you know, and then we do add, you know, then how much money do you have? Because we do need, I mean, because there's a pretty big
starting point where you're like, all right, I can take these guys serious, or no, Ryan Kinney, you're full of shit. Let's, you know, move on. We're not going to waste time with them.
It kind of depends on the goals, you know. So if you're just going to build out a visitor center, a small little visitor center, you know, in an existing building.
So it's all, we'll do this. We'll play scenario. We'll play build your distillery. No. All right. So we want to produce about 25 barrels a day, and we want a gift shop, and we want probably what, 100 visitors to come in a day or something like that.
Maybe something, again, a tasting room.
And a tasting room, something like that. All right, help us with our goal.
Oh gosh, yeah, this is the same thing. We avoid this conversation with our clients too. How much is it going to cost?
Yeah,
and we're going to be on Main Street.
Well, that helps.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 25 barrels a day. That's a decent, you know, craft distillery. You know, that's a couple million dollars, I'd say. It's in that range.
Okay,
you know, there's lots of.
Do you co-sign?
Lots of other details. No.
We are not investors.
No, exactly. And that's kind of the thing. We start, you know, if you came to us and said, well, I've got $100,000 and I need all this stuff, and we'd say, no, you're not going to get it.
Right.
It's just not going to be safe. It's not going to be good for your visitors. It's not going to be good for your brand. At that point, we may steer you towards, you know, contract distilling with somebody, build your brand up till you have some more money, or fundraise or something. You know, if you say, well, I've got $1 million. So then we say, okay, well, let's figure out what you can get for that. You know, what all is included in that. So there's a lot of back and forth. It's not always a hard no.
Yeah,
I'm not going to work with you.
So when you are talking about those initial goals of saying, okay, we're going to have more production versus more of a showroom or something like that. When I think of what was done at Angel's Envy, I think it's the perfect balance of a lot of that. I mean, you've got production there. Granted, that production is just a very, very small percentage of what Angel's Envy needs to be able to fulfill their market, but it also gives them a tasting room. It gives them a gift shop experience, gives them all that. How did you work with them to try to figure out what does that goal look like? And not just them in particular, but anybody that says, like, this is how do we work towards the goal or what you want to do? How do you figure out those numbers, or like say, like, is this the production amount you want? Is this the visitor traffic you want? Like, how do you help figure out those goals?
Yeah, I mean, with most distilleries, and I'll shut up and let Eric jump in here. He's got, but we're planning most of these distilleries for visitor traffic in terms of the space planning.
I'm sure it's changed over a few years. If that's probably the main goal a lot of people have now,
it's one of the big goals. Yeah, I mean, well, and also we get a lot of people who say we're never going to have anybody coming in here. There's no, you know, this is just production, blah blah blah. And
it's a lie.
And yeah. then they get it half built and they're like, well, how are we going to get a tour through here?
So you're like, wait a minute, you said there were no visitors.
Exactly. So that's something we plan out from the beginning. Is we always, you know, figure out, okay, well, how can we get 10 to 12, 15 people around this equipment in various spots, regardless of what, you know, what they're planning for. Cause you're going to want to show off whether it's actual consumers or customers for the bourbon industry. They're going to bring somebody there to show off their equipment.
What about when they ask you, we're going to set barrels on fire in our visitor experience in downtown?
Like Old Forester, for example. Yeah.
You have enough money, we can make anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of probably fire suppression things to put in there and everything like that to sort of make that happen. Okay, so you figured out the goals, you started figuring out what's this, you know, what do you want it to look like? How do you get to the actual design phase to figure out the tasting bar's going over here, your bottling's going to be over here? Like, how does that all work? Because I'm sure just from when we had the other guys on, from the mechanical perspective, there's a lot happening. But how do you start sitting there and figure out how do we arrange this sort of stuff?
Sure. You know, and I think with our experience, we know a lot about how things flow, and that helps. So, you know, you've got the fermenters, you've got all that. A lot of times somebody can call us up and say, all right, I got a 12-inch column still. You know, that's to be honest, that's almost enough of a jumping off point for us to start going. As far as the design, the architecture goes, I always ask for some sort of precedent. Like, what do you like? What have you been to? Do you have any images of a feel or a design aesthetic that you're looking for? And this is something that back in architecture school, that's kind of the first piece of any project is you get precedent imagery. You get, whether that be an actual completed building or just, you know, material or whatever it is, you can get that inspiration from anything. So that's kind of where we start with clients. A lot of times they have a good idea of what they want, whether they know how to express it or not. So it's kind of our job to sort of usher them through that and come up with the ideas. Now, how that happens, it's almost, you know, there's an art aspect to it, I would say, where you don't really know until you see it. And we've had that happen on a lot of our projects. Fred B. Noe one, I think, would be a good example where we were going down a different path. We thought that was the way to go. And then one of the guys in the office had this sort of stroke of genius, and we're like, no, that's it right there. And so we took that one image, and the client loved it, and the rest is history.
Is that with the new craft distillery? Yeah, it turned out beautiful.
Yeah, can you go into detail a little bit more about, like, what was that stroke of genius, or what was that thing that made it sort of hit the mark?
Man, that's tough to describe, I guess. So
it just comes from the air.
Its aura.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with Jim Beam, it was tough because, you know, they have such a long history, and there's such a certain design aesthetic associated with that. But we also knew that this was supposed to be the new, you know, high-end distillery. So how do you respect that history, but also bring it in to the future and to the modern times? And so that gable form that's sort of pulled apart in the middle, and that's where you go into the distillery, it sort of captured all that. And so I don't know how to, you know, necessarily, like, there's no checkbox or anything. It's just one of those things where we're gathered around one of the computers in the office and just, no, this is it. Looks awesome.
So like little details of like certain projects, like I'm just looking through this book and, you know, like Old Forester has like the elevator, you know, that follows the still all the way up, you know, in the warehouse and all that. Like, how much of that is like them saying, we want an elevator that goes up, or, you know, we want this or that, or how much are you all saying, like, you know, it'd be really cool is you got this long still, let's follow it up with an elevator. Like, who kind of leads that process, you know, of coming up with like creative one-off ideas for each place?
Yeah. I mean, with each project, every project, it's a team effort, you know, so lots of times clients will come with ideas. We'll come with ideas. Several of those projects, we had exhibit designers that were involved, and interior designers that are from our team or other teams. With any good project, it'll be a collaboration. So it's never, if we come show up at a first meeting and we have the answer right, then we're all wrong.
Right.
So how do we strike gold on the first time?
Yeah.
If you're exactly the smartest person in the room, leave the room or something.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's never, you know, it's lots of times we'll take germs of their ideas. They'll, you know, we'll come up with something and see, bounce several ideas off the client and see what resonates, what doesn't. It's an iterative process. So there's a lot of back and forth, it's kind of a spiral moving forward. You know, we'll go in circles, but we're continuously moving forward is kind of the idea.
What are some ideas where you're like, that's not going to happen?
This one's way too different.
Yeah.
The column still pokes out the top of the building. We've seen that a couple times.
Yeah.
Oh,
sketches. Okay. You're like, no.
Yeah, haven't really thought about the adverse effects of the weather and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, I think people, they just think, oh, it's just this column still. But there's an amazing amount of piping and connections and all that sort of stuff that has to go that sometimes we hide it, sometimes we show it off, but they're ideas. So that's fine. It's a starting point.
When you are talking to some of these clients, I mean, Ryan just mentioned Old Forester, you have the elevator going up. And a lot of people need to have sort of like this one thing that's really like a focus point or that differentiates them from somebody else. Is that a typical conversation that comes up, and sort of how do you lead that conversation or figure out how do we make this different? The one thing that I always try to say is that you can go to a lot of these places and get the 51% corn tour is what we always call the generic thing. But there's always something there that they want to gravitate towards to make people see, like, this is what makes us different. So how does that happen?
most of the time that's coming from their brand. You know, so we're at the beginning of each project, assuming they already have a brand and that it's playing off of what they differentiate themselves by. So if somebody is secondary aging, you know, that's going to be the key focal point of the project. Or if they're doing something special with their column, or if they're doing something with their, you know, a special doubler or something, those are going to be the things that we're going to try to emphasize in the building to reemphasize their brand, you know, because at the end of the day, the product is what we're all there to celebrate. So that's what we want to do and that helps them tell their story on their tour. If you're emphasizing something verbally on your tour, but the architecture doesn't reflect that, it's hard for that story to connect with visitors. So that's usually the starting point for us is, okay, what's special about your bourbon? You tell me your story, and then we're going to sort of embody that in the architecture is the idea.
It was special fermentation tanks, right?
That's right. Right. Everybody's fermenters are special. Another client that you all that was Lux Row, and I think they were one of the first with like the glass kind of side of the warehouse. And then now you see like everybody's doing, you know, a glass warehouse at some point. Who started that idea of like, we should look into
that
it?
That one
look
came from Don Lux, right? That was his idea to pull some.
Yeah, to pull back and have those, seeing all the whole thing on the side. Yeah.
So that was kind of the one that started it. But then, you know, the Heaven Hill one that has it kind of glass on the corner. And then if you've been to Bardstown Bourbon recently, the entire end of a building is glass, which is, you know, we're just keep taking it a step further every time.
Before you know it, it's just a whole thing of glass.
A whole thing of glass. But I don't know. There's a fine line. You don't want it to be cheap or showy or Disney World, I guess, you know. So you want to have a certain authenticity to it. And then, you know, you try to pick up on what's there as well. So that's something that Bardstown Bourbon, for example, you know, we have the very modern distillery and then the bottling building, which is kind of much more of a industrial, modern, but functional. I mean, the building is designed to function. And then, you know, they said, okay, well, we're going to do these warehouses across the front of the property. How do we tie all this together? And so they trusted us to come up with some ideas for that, and seems to be working out.
Really cool. So another question I kind of had for you also, we're not architects and we're not going to ever claim to do that, but for any of the sort of listeners out there that are kind of super nerds and super fans of like the scientific aspect of things, talk about some of those sort of like constraints that you have to work in when you're trying to design, move, architect, and put things in their position. Like, what are those constraints that you have to figure out? If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon. The farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's PLUS.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription. So another question I kind of had for you also, we're not architects and we're not going to ever claim to do that, but for any of the sort of listeners out there that are kind of super nerds and super fans of like the scientific aspect of things, talk about some of those sort of like constraints that you have to work in when you're trying to design, move, architect, and put things in their position. Like, what are those constraints that you have to figure out?
How much time do you have?
Yeah, well, I mean,
what engineers do you not like working with?
No. Yeah, those guys over at Shroud Tate are no good.
Yeah.
Well, they're all called separated mixed use occupancy buildings. And this is kind of really getting into the nerdy side of it. But there's different classifications within a distillery that you probably don't see really anywhere else. I mean, essentially, it's a chemical factory. It's an oil refinery or whatever that you're going to bring the general public into, which is not common. So you have different classifications. So, you know, for instance, the fermenter room isn't super high hazard, so that can just be a factory setting. Whereas the still tower and where you're filling the barrels, the cistern room is more high hazard because you have that high proof alcohol. So there's a separation that has to happen between those, and that's usually in the form of a rated wall.
All right, you got to explain. I don't know what a rated wall is.
Okay.
So you got to school us here on these stuff.
Sure. So there's different ways of achieving what a rated wall is. So in a lot of distilleries, that's just with the concrete masonry block. Cinder block is what it, you know, kind of the layman's term. It's concrete masonry unit is the real name. So that's normally how it's achieved. Or, I mean, to be honest, just regular old drywall can provide 1 hour, 2 hour rating, depending on how many layers of it that you put on a wall. So usually is, you know, one of those two things is how we achieve it.
What are you rating against? The heat or the
fire?
Fire. Okay.
So the ratings are for, it's a, how long the wall will stand up to a fire. So it's a, you know, 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour wall. If for a fire will burn.
Yeah, it's cool. How theoretically, so what's a drywall rated for versus a cinder block?
Ooh, okay.
It depends on the pieces. I mean,
yeah, just a regular drywall on two sides of a wall is an hour rated. You start adding layers of drywall that can get up to 2 or 3 hours.
And that's including the studs between them?
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's UL. You may have seen that on any appliance or anything like that. They have ratings for wall assemblies in the same way. So we call out it's this wall, it's UL419 or whatever it is. And we have those drawings in our sets of drawings, and that explains it. And
because you have to have fireproof, like switches, outlets, light bulbs, everything,
now
right?
Now we're really getting into it.
Okay. Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So in those high hazard spaces, so the steel tower, the cistern room, there are requirements for rated electrical components. So if you ever go into a steel tower, a cistern room where they're filling barrels, you'll notice like the light fixtures are much more bulky and they're all sealed up. Same with, you know, any plugs or anything like that. And that's to prevent any spark that could, you know, light something on fire. So that's part of what we do. That's also, you know, the engineers also come into play there. And then, you know, there's another layer of code that the Distilled Spirits Council, DISCUS, and you may be familiar with them. It's because this is, you know, in the normal building code, they don't specifically describe distilleries. It's kind of a special thing. So when it comes to that, they basically just say follow best practices, industry standards, and the Distilled Spirits Council is where we get those standards.
It's funny you say all this stuff. It's like it's now starting to piece the puzzle together in my head, because any distillery that we go to, you always have to walk through a door to actually go to the still, and you go in there and it's freaking 3,000 degrees, and then you're out of there and you're going out to the next door to go to the whatever, you know, fermentation tank room or anything like that. Everything is sort of segmented off.
Yeah, and that's kind of the challenge for our job, is to figure out how do we, because, you know, that's the still is the usually the money shot. You know, that's what everybody wants to show off. That's where they spend all their money. That's where, the product becomes kind of the product. So for us, you know, being able to show that off without, but still be safe is a lot of the challenge. So, you know, there's lots of different ways we go about that, whether it's fire rated glass or fire shutters that that close in case of emergency, to separate that out. Cause that's ultimately, that's biggest part of our job, is to keep everybody safe. I mean, that's, you know, the fun stuff is secondary to our primary goal, primary responsibility, is to keep everybody safe. And when you've got, you know, highly flammable liquid being processed with tourists coming and going, that's a high threshold to maintain. Then the other goal of showing it all off and making sure it's fun and exciting and people can see it.
And aesthetically pleasing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. The old guys in the office would have never, you know, the guys, you know, back in the 30s, this was never a thing. You know, this was,
right,
you know, bourbon tourism.
It's just
wasn't
functional.
Exactly. Crank it out and get it in a bottle. Let's go. It's, you know, what do you want to come see? There's nothing to see here. So that was never a thing, you know, until relatively recent history.
Yeah. So fire is one constraint, right? So what's another one that you have to figure out that's pretty common that you all have to sort of navigate?
ADA, making sure you have, so with the tourist side of things, you know, having visitors come through, we've got to follow the Americans with Disability Act. So probably 10 years ago, there was lots of work out there retrofitting old distilleries for tours, you know, because you've got to make sure you have an equal opportunity for people with different handicaps to be able to see the same tour that everybody else does. And with these old facilities,
it wasn't really a thing.
Yeah. So you know, there's several facilities out there that have lots of strange ramps that go, you know, around the facilities that you kind of, if you ever take a minute to look at it, you go, why in the world is that there? It's because the distillery was there, and then we had to retrofit it back to to make it work.
And now you see a lot of distilleries that are saying, all right, just tear it down and we'll rebuild the visitor center. We'll just start from scratch. Is that because it's, well, A, they're seeing the demand, but as well as for constraints like that as well?
Yeah, a lot of it's for demand, you know, and there tends to be a, with any industry, kind of an arms race of if your main competitor's doing one thing, you know, and just did a new addition and brand new building, then by golly, we should do it too. If they can have it, why can't we have a new shiny object?
It helps. It helps when they go into their brand meetings and they're saying, look at all these competitors, look at what they're doing. And then it's pictures of our project. So who did this stuff? And then we get the phone call. So that works out too.
What did you think when you saw the bourbon pyramids? Because I know you all didn't do it. Were you like, that can't happen or that could happen? Or I don't know. I'm curious because obviously sure. It never happened, but and maybe it will.
Well, that is one of our clients.
oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a, you know, good partner of ours. The Sugarubon Architects were the local architects on that project.
Oh, okay. See, Oscar.
It all comes back. It all comes back to these guys. They got their claws hooked in everywhere. Yeah.
We're trying. that's a unique
structure.
Challenge. Yeah. Yeah. And they do a lot of wood structures. So the shape of it is not necessarily as striking to us in terms of making it happen as how to do it out of wood.
Right.
You know, so building a processing plant, you know, for alcohol that's highly flammable inside a wood structure, you know, poses a few challenges.
The building officials, yeah, they'll be like, but why are you making it out of wood? That doesn't even register because it's just not on the radar. So it'll be interesting when it's all said and done. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got another question. So you have, you know, a lot of these massive distilleries that you work for. Then you also have on the other side, you had something like Jephthah Creed, a little bit smaller scale, but kind of a clean slate. So kind of talk about how that one was a little bit different project than, say, Four Roses when you're retrofitting something from 1909 in there.
Sure. Yeah. Jephthah Creed was one of my projects. So they, you know, starting a new distillery from scratch provides some good opportunities. It's just different when you have a brand that's already established versus one that's up and coming or one that's not even on the shelves yet with different, you know, different companies. You know, so we really delve into lots of time we try to get into their packaging or what their story is going to be, you know, because you don't want to be building an ultra modern facility if they're going, you know, more on the
traditional side
of things. Yeah. You know, so that's a lot where, you know, like Eric was saying, we come asking them for inspiration images. What do you like? What's, you know, what's your branding going to be? What's your label looking like? You know, a lot of times they'll have ads that are already out if they're producing something. You know, what's your ad look like? You know, if you're, it's different if you're showing pictures of the beach with people drinking on the beach versus, you know, somebody drinking in the woods, you know, yeah. It's just different. So you try to play off that and figure out, you know, where are they stylistically? Yeah, because this is gonna be their home. You know, it's just like everybody's, you know, like a personal house. This is gonna be their home for their brand, and it needs to last a long time for their different branding. So we try not, you know, there's a balance there between doing too stylistic, because marketing does change. I mean, they're gonna change, you know, labels and that sort of thing. But at, you know, the heart of everything, they're gonna be more of a traditional brand, or they're gonna be more of a cutting edge brand. You know, and you try to figure out where that balance is architecturally to make it work for them.
Nobody ever says I want the Corona lifestyle here in the middle of Eastern Kentucky or something like that.
Not yet. Shelbyville.
yeah. Beachfront property in Shelbyville. Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of see you have some documents here in front of you. What we have here?
Yeah. So we were digging. So preparing for this, you know, we were digging through some of our old documents here and found, so this is, we found some old letters, from the president of Old Prentice Distillery, which now Four Roses. So this one was a reference that we asked them to write apparently in 1914 for a project. But you can see it's that the it's got their logo on the top there, and it's from that one's you know, basically giving us a reference of how good we did on their distillery.
That's awesome.
Four Roses. Back in the day.
Who was the job for? You don't then say. Not for Four Roses, but for the reference to.
I think it says it on there. I'm not sure who. It was something here in Louisville, I think.
And so I got the question is, when you think of something that's a historical significance of something like Four Roses, because they're a lot different than any other distillery, like in their architecture, that's like sort of that Spanish influence and stuff like that. How do you continue to keep that vibe or keep that sort of same influence going when you just, like, say, redid their new visitor center? How does that mesh and mold and are you kind of like, all right, well, we're going to try to blend the old with the new? Like, how does that all work?
That one thematically was to, the thought of the visitor center was to be sort of the grand manor for the facility. So there wasn't ever, you know, a big mansion that was on the facility. But it, when you walk on the campus, you know, it kind of feels like there should have been, you know, there could have been, you know, the master distiller up on the hill, you know, watching over everything in his mansion, or the owner, or whoever.
Or they're doing olive oil there. It's almost sometimes what it feels like to me. Should be an olive oil field behind there.
Yeah, that's right. So we wanted to do that, you know, so they obviously have such a stylistic campus already, but we didn't want to just copy exactly what was there. I mean, those are commercial buildings and they were designed for commercial style. So, you know, we really looked back, frankly, we looked back at some of our older work residentially on that one as inspiration, some of the things that were being built in the 20s and teens residentially to get influence on that visitor center. And again, it's sort of the visitor center piece is always sort of the, you know, you want people to feel like you're at home. This is the place you're getting invited into their home. And so we kind of ran with that and, you know, did a wraparound porch and it has a real, while grand and big, a residential feel to it. So that was kind of the stylistic choice there.
And do you have all these documents that date back to the early 1900s that you can go and reference and say, oh, well, here's the blueprints? Or like, I don't know if they're blueprints back then. I don't know what you would have back then.
But. Yeah, we do. So we have the original, some of the original drawings for the JTS Brown Distillery. We have lots of old drawings from the early 1900s, early teens. And that was, yeah, and that's exactly, so we started digging through our drawing files of where the older projects were and started looking at those for inspiration. So yeah, they're on
have, like, the CAD files on a USB drive still for you.
We're trying, you know.
Would have been nice.
In the cloud somewhere. Yeah. It'd be ideal.
Well, then what would our interns do all summer long? Yeah, exactly. They've got to dig through drawers and get dirty and let them, you know, get the graphite all over them.
So have any other distilleries outside of Kentucky contact you? I mean, I'm doing design and stuff. I think most of these have been Kentucky or y'all's footprint outside of the state.
Yeah, getting calls from Texas seems to be coming in a lot. We did just do the Distilled Spirits Council conference down in Austin, and tried some really great stuff that they're doing in Texas. The scales of things we're finding in Texas and outside of Kentucky really are so much smaller. So they're like, oh yeah, we're the big dog in Texas, and you look them up and they still have like dirt roads and stuff like that. So it's like. Okay. But you never know. You never know who's going to be the next that's bought by one of the big, you know, liquor companies or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, we send out proposals all over. Got an email from somebody from Scotland today. And, I maybe they just Googled distillery architecture and we popped up. I'm not sure.
That SEO is paying off.
Yeah. That's
right. Yeah, that one is, for some reason, we tend to pop up. But there's, you know,
instead of getting letters hand-typed by, yeah. Yeah. And then SEO now.
There's, you know, that sort of feeling out process. Are these people serious? Are they legit? And then you submit a proposal and a lot of times you don't hear back.
But. Yeah. It's part of like any bidding process, right?
Sure. Yeah. If we got every proposal that we sent out, then yeah, we wouldn't be sitting here. We'd be on the beach.
or you're not charging enough.
Yeah, there you go. Or you're not charging enough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
So I guess that's the kind of the next thing is start when you start thinking of like where can Joseph and Brevera go from here? Like is the goal, like do you all want to be known as the distillery architects, like the place that you should be the first call if you're going to be serious about this? Like what is your end goal of basically becoming the people that people want to call about this sort of facet of the process?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that's always the goal, and we hope we're somewhere near there. We're the go-to. I venture to say that our portfolio of distillery work, I'd put it up against any other firm in the country or the world architecturally.
There wouldn't be much in there.
Yeah. So you know, when a client or a potential client calls up and says we're gonna have an RFP coming out, I welcome the chance. You know, this is a great opportunity for us to show off, and you know, and I try to get that meeting as fast as I can because you know,
what's an RFP?
Sorry. I'm sorry,
request for proposal.
Okay,
gotcha. I got right. You on that one.
Yeah, we're competitive, of course. Yeah, anytime we see a distillery come up that's not us, they'll learn. You know, when it all goes bad, they'll call us.
Come fix all their problems.
Yeah, well, but no, I mean, I think
No, I'd say it's a friendly rivalry. We're, you know, with anything, it's, there's other firms out there that have done other distilleries, but not near to the quantity. And I'd say quality.
So is there anything in the bourbon business that you all haven't done yet? Or have you literally done everything?
I'd say as far as the buildings are concerned, I think we've probably done every kind of prototypical building.
Yeah. I think the hospitality thing is really coming around. So they've, you know, they say the Napa Valley of Kentucky, right? So those campuses that'll be sort of that all-inclusive, like people come in and they're going to stay at this one place, which is not usually the case currently, but we're seeing it go that way, where you're going to spend a day or multiple days at one place. Usually it's like we're going to try and hit 3 or 4 distilleries in a day, which is difficult if you've ever done it. I mean, it's, so I think that, you know, on that side, the hospitality side, hotels are one of our fastest growing markets. A lot of that's related to the bourbon business, but I think sort of making that jump. Yeah, we've done restaurants and gift shops and tour start areas and things like that, but keeping those people on campus and then developing, you know, the campuses. So whether that be a 250-year-old campus or a brand new campus where it's sort of designed, every piece of it is designed, which, you know, we could probably bring some of our parks experience in when it comes to that.
Well, you haven't seen an Airbnb in the distillery yet. So you still can figure out some way to even elevate the visitor experience.
That's
there.
Come up, but it has never been executed.
Has it really?
Yeah.
Is there any constraints with having people stay on a campus?
Other than the fact that you don't want them at the distillery at, you know, 11 p.m. at night, messing around, touching buttons.
Make sure everything's locked up.
That's for Sonatrol, those security people.
TTB actually has some problems with that. TTB and ABC. So they've got requirements that you can't have residents on the premises. So, you know, there's some, that has been brought up several times, where lots of people, you know, master distillers or owners from out of town wanted to have an apartment, you know, in the building, you know, somewhere for them to stay, so they don't have to get a hotel. And that becomes the problem, is it's not, you know, legal. So you have to figure out a way, you know, either they usually end up with an apartment somewhere nearby or something, but there are lots of calls. There's a lot of infrastructure on the bourbon tourism side of things that's missing. There's lots of opportunities for hotels and restaurants, especially when you get to some of the more rural places. I mean, you see that down at Maker's Mark, they've got, you know, restaurant down there and places, you know, they've got the little, I think they still have a bed and breakfast down there.
And they're creating all these little small buildings anywhere. Like it's a small campus.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's lots of opportunity for lots of these brands and collectively, you know, the communities around them to build up their infrastructure. Cause we hear a lot of visitors who come in and hear and say that they, you know, they like to stay, you know, in Barstown, but everything was booked up, you know, or they like to stay, you know, in Frankfurt or wherever it is, because it's such a boom that the infrastructure of supporting buildings and cast is not in place yet, even though it's been going for a long time, 20 years.
I'd love to stay in a boutique 100-person hotel in the middle of Barstown Bourbon's campus, so I can just stumble, you know, right, stumble home there.
Well, somebody had also mentioned like doing a warehouse camp out sometime. So just having like a campsite, like literally in the middle of a field between warehouses, would be an interesting thing. But I'm sure there's plenty of legal.
I'd rather
reasons.
Be in the boutique hotel. Yeah,
exactly. Where's the glamping pass then?
That's right.
That's more my speed.
RVs or something.
Yeah, there you go. Just put the shitter somewhere else, right?
That's right.
Well, guys, this was a fun conversation to kind of get a little bit of the history, not only of just your firm, your family's, you know, sort of pass with this, as well as kind of knowing exactly when people need to make that first phone call, who do they go to, or how good is your first Google result for distillery architect? So it's awesome to be able to hear that side of things. But before we sign off, I want people to give an opportunity for people to tell people how they can get in contact with you, how they can learn more about you and everything like that too.
So our website's probably the best way to get a hold of us. Joseph and spelled out.net, and there's a contact form on there that comes directly to Cash and I. So if you have any questions, any comments, you want to build a $40 million distillery, just
there's the starting point. Yep, there's a starting point. We finally got it out of him.
They fooled us with $2 million.
Drop us a line.
$2 million just their portion of the bill.
There's a lot of money that it takes to be able to build a distillery. But guys, I want to do say thank you again for having you on, telling that sort of story and kind of getting to know more about the architecture side, because this is, again, one of those things that we haven't touched on with almost 400 plus episodes of doing this. And it's just yet another thing that we like to be able to bring to our listeners and help them sort of that education perspective too. So, and thanks for the whole science background thing. It's like when we start getting those constraints, I'm like, I know there's some listeners out there that are like, all right, I can nerd out on this too. So
now I know fire ratings.
Yeah, well, now we know that. We learned something today. So make sure you check them out on their website. You can also check out bourbonpursuit.com. We've got sign ups for our newsletters. Follow us on all the socials as well. But with that, cheers, everybody. We'll see you next week.